Hello, I'm Helen Patterson, violinist with the Academy of St Martin in the Fields. Welcome to another edition of the Academy podcast. Throughout this series, we speak to some of the world's great musicians, examining the work and the repertoire at the heart of this much-loved chamber orchestra's yearly schedule. In this episode, we look ahead to the world premiere of a new violin concerto, speaking to the Russian composer Andrei Rubtsov.
Such a rare occasion for the new piece, for the modern piece, to have this audience, you know, concert after the concert.
And the violinist for whom it was written, Julia Fischer.
It's not mathematics, it's music. Yeah, that's what I always want to find in music, and that's what I found in Andrei's music from the very first note I heard what he wrote.
Podcaster Ben Eshmade spoke to Julia ahead of her tour with the Academy, which is coming up in January 2016, when she will give the concerto its world premiere in Cologne and subsequent performances all across Germany.
Your relationship with the Academy goes back a long way. When did you first work together?
The first project we actually did was the recording of the Four Seasons in the National Botanic Garden of Wales. And as a matter of fact, I was 18 when I first performed with the Academy. So that was the first time I played with the orchestra. And a couple of months later, I went on tour with the Academy with Sir Neville Mariner conducting. And I remember that it was so friendly and easy to work with them. We had just so much fun performing. And it was kind of like chamber music. You know, I came, I played, they understood what I wanted, I understood what they wanted. We discussed a few things, and then we played through the Four Seasons, and everybody went home and was very happy. It was very relaxed, and it's, you know, it's very hard to explain these things. It's chemistry, and it just happens. You just come and you make music together, and immediately you feel that you're on the same wave, and it just, you feel the same way, and you want the same thing, and you have the same intellectual input, the same emotional input, and that just makes it like real chamber music, and it makes it so agreeable and so easy, actually, to play together. As a matter of fact, the recording sessions were horrible times. I remember that, for example, they wanted us to play at 6 o'clock in the morning because they needed the lights for the sunset or something strange. So we all had to be there by 5 o'clock in the morning, so you would think that we were actually all in very bad mood and upset or something. But actually, we just thought it's a very funny thing that we have to play an E major concerto with good intonation at 6 o'clock in the morning. And we just enjoyed it.
The first and subsequent tours with the Academy were with Sir Neville Mariner conducting. Why and when did you transition to directing the Academy?
It was actually during that tour that Sir Neville suggested that I would do a tour without him. He feels unnecessary. He said that he feels that we don't need him to conduct and we can do that by ourselves. And so he suggested that I would do a tour without him conducting.
Going back to directing, how has your leadership style changed with time and experience?
Well, the first tour with the Academy without conductor was in 2006. And I was stupid enough to put the Chamber Symphony by Shostakovich on the program. That was the first time that I did a piece with a chamber orchestra, and I was supposed to lead it, and it was very hard for me. I remember the first rehearsals that I was completely, I had absolutely no idea how to put that together and how to organize time, for example. You only have a few hours to put together an entire program, so you can't spend countless hours with the first movement. You just have to go and you have to put it together in a very short time. To get it organized was very complicated for me. And I think that in the beginning I was quite shy. I was quite shy to say things because the Academy is not a normal orchestra. It's not, you know, they're not musicians coming there, sitting down, waiting for the conductor or the leader to say something. Everybody there has to say something. So you have first cello, you have the first violinist, you have a leader of the second violinist, and even the people sitting in the second row, and they raise their hands because they have to say something and they have a musical idea. And it is pure chamber music, which makes it so great, but which makes it also a challenge to lead this orchestra because actually they don't need a leader, but still you need somebody to organize it and to find a way in between these personalities sitting there and at the same time putting all these personalities together in one piece and in one orchestra is quite a challenge.
Thank you.
From what you're saying, it's the idea of unifying, creating one musical voice.
It's very inspiring. You know, you never have a problem with routine in this orchestra. I never, ever had a problem with routine. We played, I remember in 2009, I did the big anniversary tour. We did 10 concerts in Europe and 10 concerts in the United States. So we altogether, we had 20 times the same program. There was never a sign of routine. That never happens if you have great personalities in an orchestra. But sometimes you have, of course, arguments in the rehearsals, and one has one idea and the other one has the other idea, and to put them together, it's a challenge, like in the chamber ensemble. It's like when I go on tour with my quartet, we have exactly the same problem. But there, it's at least only four people.
Yeah, that was one of my questions, actually. I mean, what's the differences and similarities between working with a smaller ensemble like a quartet and the academy?
It's very similar. It's very similar. It's for myself. It's always finding, realizing when do I have to lead and when do I have to listen. And it's the same with in an orchestra, like in a quartet ensemble. In the end, as a soloist, I can always put down, you know, my foot and say, okay, we just do it the way I want to do it. But I can't do that in a quartet session. It's just not. I mean, that's not the idea of making chamber music. And so in the quartet, I think for all of us, it's quite hard because we are all very strong personalities. We all have our interpretations in our head, and we have huge discussions and fights and arguments during the rehearsals. We once before a concert actually had an argument in the way that the presenter came and asked if the concert is going to happen or not. And we were like, what? We always fight like that in a rehearsal. Totally normal for us. And it's also healthy, you know. Arguments in music is healthy for a good interpretation. I never had a fight like that in the academy, I must say. They're, in the end, quite respectful.
Looking through your discography and past engagements, a few artists feature very regularly. Are you particular about who you record and perform with?
It's a very simple answer. Yes, I am. I don't want to lose time to play with musicians I don't understand or I don't like, or I don't have the same musical idea with. So when I like someone, if I get along with someone, then I want to perform with them regularly. And the thing is, when you work regularly, then you can start on different levels. Because, for example, when I go on tour with Yuri Timirkanov, for example, we've played numerous concerts together. And the first rehearsal starts on the level I usually, with a conductor and orchestra I don't know, I would go on stage with. But that's only the rehearsal with Timirkanov. And then we start working. So you get on a completely different level and have completely different possibilities, what you can achieve in an interpretation when you take the time and when you work with somebody who you know exactly how their minds and hearts work.
I suppose a follow-on question would be, when you revisit a piece of music, are you trying to perfect it, or do you see it more as a variation every time that you perform it?
That's complicated. Usually, well, I always work on a piece. So when I go on stage and I perform it in concert, then while I walk off stage, I actually have in my head what I want to do differently tomorrow. But these are smaller things usually. It's not the altogether interpretation. I'm quite clear what I want altogether from the piece, but then the little details I would think about again every day I go on stage with it. Every few years, and that's actually an automatic process. It's not something I do consciously, but it just happens. And suddenly one day I feel, okay, now I need to buy new music and I have to relearn this piece from scratch. It just happens every few years, and I have absolutely no idea when it happens and why, or if maybe it was one concert I played where I was so unhappy that it happens, then I don't know. It just happens. It happened, for example, Beethoven violin concerto like 3 years ago. I bought new music and I looked at all the cadenzas which exist in the world to, in the end, come back to the exact same cadenza I played before, but there starts a working process. And yeah, that happens to every piece. occasionally.
Moving on to the programme, Andrei Rubtsov, can you tell us a little bit about how you met?
Yes, I played with the Russian National Orchestra in November 2001. But after the concert, there was a reception for the orchestra. And he was there, and he just started talking to me about music, and we just talked basically the entire evening about different interpretations, ideas, and everything. And we're almost the same age. He's only a year older than me. And from that time on, we saw each other occasionally because I played quite regularly with the Russian National Orchestra. My debut album was with Khachaturian and Glazunov and Prokofiev first with the Russian National Orchestra. And at that time, he played in the orchestra. So over the years, I always saw him as an oboist actually in the orchestra. And then in 2006, I invited him for my chamber music festival. And there we played chamber music together. And actually, at that time, we also performed for the first time together the Bach Double Concerto. And that we recorded then in 2009 together with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields.
You're giving the world premiere of his violin concerto on tour. Have you seen the score yet?
I have seen the score, yes. I have the music already, of course. Actually, he wrote the concerto already 10 years ago. He wrote it in 2006. And I received the music for the first time at that time. And I was actually supposed to do the first performance in 2009. But then I had a child and I just couldn't make it. So I always had the score in my head and I wanted to perform it. So finally now I made it happen that it's a great piece. I'm very happy that he wrote something for violin and chamber orchestra. I think I actually specifically asked him to do so for chamber orchestra because the repertory for me and the Academy is quite limited when I don't have a conductor. And if I want to be the soloist and not the leader, then I mean you can do the Mozart concertos, the Bach, the Vivaldi, and basically then you're through. So I said that something with chamber orchestra would be fantastic. What is so wonderful about this music is it's pure emotional. It's not constructed music as very often today. And when I look at music, at contemporary music, then that's exactly what I'm looking for. I don't want to have this complicated scores where you have to have a PhD to actually read through it. And then in the end, you have no emotional outcome. I try to avoid these pieces. What I want is to have any kind of emotional language, because that's what music is about. It's not mathematics, it's music. Yeah, that's what I always want to find in music, and that's what I found in Andrei's music from the very first note I heard what he wrote.
Could we talk about violins? Can you tell us about your current instrument and how you came to choose it?
I had a Stradivarius, the Booth Stradivarius from 1716 from the Nippon Music Foundation from 2000 until 2004. And in 2004, I woke up one morning and I decided, okay, this is the time I need to buy my own instrument. And I called Harvey de Souza and I said he has to find me an instrument, and he called me back a week later to say that he found a fantastic violin which is in London and I have to come and have to see it. And I came to London and I took the violin and I bought it, and I've been playing the violin since then. With the Stradivarius I had was actually a fantastic instrument. It was really great, but the personality of the instrument was so strong that occasionally I could not achieve the sound I wanted to make, but I had to live with the sound the violin wanted to make. And the Guadagnini gives me all the options and all the possibilities, but I'm always the boss. And yeah, it's just my personality that I need that.
Could we just talk briefly about the rest of the program that you'll be presenting? You've got the Tchaikovsky and the Mendelssohn, I believe.
Yeah, we do. I do the Mendelssohn double concerto with Juliana Avieva. She's a wonderful pianist and a good friend. And we did a tour last year together and have played a few concerts already together. And we have done the Mendelssohn double, actually, in the Gstaad Mendelssohn Festival a few years ago. I'm very much looking forward to that, to have her on tour with me. And the Tchaikovsky Serenade, it's a classic. I've done it with the Academy numerous times already. And we decided that if we have something as complicated as a contemporary piece and a first performance of a concerto where you need a lot of time and a lot of energy, then it's only fair if we have something very rewarding and fun in the second part.
Aside from the violin, I mean, what are your interests and passions? I mean, how do you relax if you do relax?
It's true. I'm sorry. I wish I could give you something else, but it's just the truth. Piano playing is my passion. and my hobby. And then, of course, I have a family and a life outside of music. But when I really want to relax just for myself, then you can find me on the piano.
The chance to premiere a new work for violin in front of your home audience in Germany must be a special experience. Are you looking forward to it?
I'm very much looking forward to it, but it's not. It doesn't depend on where I play it. For me, really, the most important thing is what I play with whom. So who's on stage with me. That's what is most important to me, not necessarily in which city I play.
You're listening to an Academy of St. Martin in the Fields podcast with me, Helen Patterson. Our second interviewee, the violin concerto's composer Andrei Rubtsov, is a man of many talents. Formerly principal oboist with the Russian National Orchestra, Andrei first worked with the Academy as the oboe soloist on Julia Fischer's Bach Concertos album in 2009. He's also a skilled conductor with a fellowship at the Royal Scottish Conservatoire in Glasgow, granting him the opportunity to work closely with Donald Runicles and the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra. However, it is in composition where he is making the greatest name for himself, with works performed in over 60 countries around the world. Ben Eshmade spoke to Andrei to find out more about him and what to expect from his violin concerto.
You're an oboist, composer and conductor. Do you see yourself as more of one than the other?
I suppose it's a matter of how life treats me in all those fields. So I basically quit playing oboe last year because I moved here to Scotland. And I would even say that as a composer, I probably, because of having friends in wind section and the brass, I compose much more usually for the woodwinds. And let's say my most successful compositions are probably to do with the wind in instruments.
When you are composing, do you sit down at the piano? How does that process work for you?
Yeah, I have to say it's pretty much, it's very conventional. I use piano a lot. Of course, I would think a lot about things, but before actually orchestrating it, I would probably play a lot on the piano. And of course, if I compose for oboe, I have this mental image of what's possible, what's not possible, what sounds good. I'm very conventional. I'm always coming to the composition from the performance perspective, performers. So I very much like to write something that sounds effective and concert-like and presents the instrument in a favorable light without being extensively complex. So I always try to think about what's best for this instrument, I guess.
How did you meet Julia for the first time, and how did your relationship develop to the point of this composition?
So, I guess it must have been 2000, 2001. It was one of my first years. I was quite young working in the Russian National Orchestra, and Julia suddenly had quite a lot of concert with us, and I believe I met her at the first concert. I believe she played two concertos at one concert, and we have something of a reception after the concert, and I have to say, not a lot of people to say at least speaks English in my orchestra, in my ex-orchestra. So it was quite natural that we just started having conversation. And then maybe I mentioned that I composed, because I started composing at that time as well. So that's how it started. And as I mentioned, she returned quite a lot at those years. She performed quite a lot with an orchestra.
And were you surprised when she asked you to write something for her?
That was much, much later. I mean, we played several chamber pieces together, and I must have showed her some of my pieces, sent maybe her on the internet. So that's the concerto idea wasn't until much, much later, maybe. I wasn't sure right away for how serious it is, because she was becoming more and more of a star performer. So it definitely sounded right away as a serious idea that one day will become a reality, especially with a first-rate, amazing chamber orchestra. So it is only now that I am understanding the whole seriousness of what I'm part of.
Do you remember what was inspiring you at the time? What you drew upon to write this piece?
I have to say, I don't have those stories of real life situations inspiring my compositions. It's all a bit more conventional. So I thought a lot about how I want to see concerto as a several moments piece, how it would progress from one moment to another. Because I think Julia specifically mentioned she doesn't want it to be a short piece. I remember her mentioning that she doesn't know that many contemporary concertos for violin and strings that are relatively long. I think my concerto is going to be 20, 22 minutes. So those things of how I wanted to progress from one moment to another, I think was the main point in my mind when I started thinking about it.
How would you describe your composition style? Do you follow on in the Russian Romantic tradition?
I think you're surprisingly accurate describing my connection with the Russian school, because I think 8 years of performing in an orchestra really shaped me as a composer as well. I was playing mostly the core Romantic repertoire, and I was probably pretty much protected from all the modern music influence. So I'm very much a traditional composer in that respect.
What sort of directions do you have on the score?
I tend to trust performers a lot, and I tend to trust that because my, maybe we can say, range of ideas and musical forms, musical language is relatively usual. I just trust them to understand what I mean and how I want it to be expressed. Generally, I remember when I first heard them just sitting at the rehearsal. I mean, the pure sound that they're making is so awe-inspiring and magnificent. They can probably just play a C major chord for the whole concert, you know, and people will be amazed. It's just the body of sound that they produce. It's so phenomenally beautiful. My piece is relatively complex, I would say, in terms of the changing meters and complex rhythm, and it's being performed without the conductor, but I have no worries about that. I'm sure that it will just sound perfect.
One thing we haven't mentioned is you recorded Bach's Double Concerto for Violin and Oboe with Julia and the Academy in 2009 as the oboe soloist. What was that like? What recollections have you of working together?
That was massively nervous, and I felt the huge responsibility as a Russian orchestral oboist performing this a very special piece of repertoire with such an amazing orchestra. So it really, I remember preparing very seriously for that recording. But of course, the orchestra and Julia was very nice to me, and the whole experience was a very short but a very pleasant one.
Speaking of nerves, how do you feel when you hear, either in rehearsal or in the concert, your music being performed for the first time?
It's an excitement. It's something that you're waiting for many, many days and nights, and now it's happening. I never overtly or excessively nervous, but I guess another interesting and exciting and complex part is that you can't influence it on the moment it's being performed. So that's what's so different from being a conductor, where that's the pinnacle of your like responsibilities, right? Like actually shaping the music the moment it's being performed. So it's so different. When you hear notes that were just a mere ink on the page, and now it sounds with the musicians of such a high caliber. I mean, of course, it will inspire me for the new ideas, and I will take something from hopefully from this concerto for my new compositions.
I'm Academy violinist Helen Patterson, and you've been listening to an Academy of St. Martin in the Fields podcast. That's about all we have time for, but as usual, we'd love to hear your thoughts on what you've heard. So please do get in touch via our official Facebook page or on Twitter at ASMF Orchestra using the hashtag ASMF Podcast. You can hear Andrei Rubtsov's violin concerto performed by Julia Fischer and the Academy on tour in Germany in January 2016. If you wish to book tickets for these concerts, find out more about the Academy, or support our work by joining the Academy Friends, please visit asmf.org. Thank you for listening.